Okay, we're continuing.
I do have a question.
Okay, and I've got a question as well.
I got a question, something. It's a little confusing to reconcile. I was reading a little bit earlier, it's really far out, that how Gopakumar almost perceived when he went to Mahakala and saw Lord Mahakala and Mahakalapura, he was almost drawn into his effulgence. And he says, sometimes my mind felt special pleasure in beholding him surrounded by the great perfected beings who were his devotees, at once different and non-different from him. They surrounded him in subtle spiritual forms like beams of light around the sun. And then commentary was really far out.
Says,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead always invites his part and parcel jivas to share loving reciprocations with him, even in the abode of liberation. He kindly considers the liberated souls who surround him there his bhaktas, but actually they are hardly interested in personal service. The only bhakti they offer the Lord is to decorate him as particles of his effulgence. Okay, there's that statement. And then what I couldn't understand, as I said, it was hard to reconcile, was a little bit after that, I read this verse, not so much the verse, but the purport. The purport gives references. It says right here. Vaishnavas who have pure love for the Lord can easily enter Vaikuntha, but the impersonalists who prefer the oneness of mukti to the reciprocations of devotional service have little hope of being admitted. Many shastras confirm this. For example, the Yoga Vashishta Ramayana states, an ignorant, half-awake person who likes to say everything is Brahman earns by this entanglement in a network of terrible hells. And then another quote from Brahmavavata Purana, a person full of attachment for sense gratification who likes to say I am Brahman will burn in hell for billions of kalpas.
And the first one, I'll read the first one again.
First one. An ignorant person, half awake, who likes to say everything is Brahman, earns by this entanglement in a network of terrible hells.
These are different kind of liberated. I mean, they're not liberated.
They're
souls.
Brahmavadis. They're not Brahman realized. They're Brahmavadis.
They're Brahmavadis, and they're still qualified as being some kind of. They're half awake. Or the other one was engaged in sense gratification. So they're just materialistic people, like nowadays. So material people say, well, it's all one and so on. These kind of people, not the real pure Brahmavadis who recognize the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists, but they prefer to be part of his effulgence rather than do personal service.
Yeah.
And they don't deny, they don't say by everything Brahman means that they just deny his existence.
So they do recognize.
Real Brahmavadis recognize, like the Kumaras. They were Brahmavadis. They wanted to stay Brahmavadis until they actually then met the Lord, but they wanted to go see him. They knew he existed and
yeah.
Well, the different types of Brahmavadis, and these are hardly Brahmavadis, these are just
the ones from these references.
Materialistic people or foolish people who just, everything's Brahman. When Gopakumar wants to go there, what made him want to go there is that he saw that there was the demigods were all throwing flowers and chanting, glorifying, and when he wanted to know what was that, and he said, oh, This is when Rosh Hashanah just achieved liberation. So the demigods would hardly be glorifying and praising someone who was, you know, bound, destined for hell, or that disqualified. Those are certainly, Krishna starts 12th after doing the real difficult path towards him.
What's that verse? I forget the Sanskrit. Take the troublesome path.
I really don't like Foley on the telephone here. Pocket Vedas. It's horrible. Pocket Vedas. Bhagavad Gita.
12:6.
12th chapter. Arjun Vacha, and how it goes from one to the other, so difficult. Shri Bhagavan Maya Vesham no me mam nitya yukta upashati shareya pariyopeta stemi yukta tamumata. Fix their minds in my personal form, those beings which with great chanfaith are considered to be most perfect. Oops. Yetvaksharamanirdesham avyaktam paripashati. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, all such a person engaged in the welfare of all at last achieves me. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifest and personal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. But those who worship me, giving up all activities unto me and being devoted to me, without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds on me, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus will live in me always without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. Krishna can speak in very subtle ways when he's talking about it's that spontaneous devotion, and if you don't have spontaneous devotion, then you practice regulated devotion.
Should we read? Or do you want to?
My question.
Your question. Okay.
I'm reading Bhagavatam, and Bhagavatam is full of statements, prayers by conditioned souls, even the demigods, for example, praying to the Lord for material benediction repeatedly, over and over and over again. Right now, I just read for Vritrasura. And yet, it's quoted as the absolute truth. many statements by many conditioned souls. Quotes by liberated souls is one thing. But quotes by conditioned souls are also, they're quoted, they're cited.
Examples, besides the demigods in 10th canto.
Yeah.
Or demigods offering prayers
That's
in many
truth.
Places.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's true. Aruyakrichena paramparam tata.
That's Lord Brahma.
The demigods, yeah. It's Lord Brahma.
Well, Lord Brahma's.
Huh?
He's the head of our sampradaya.
He is. But even then, there's, you know, Brahma. The Madhavas won't accept certain chapters of the Bhagavatam.
Vimohana Leela.
Vimohana Leela. So, we accept it. So that's sort of an interesting thing. That why quote as truth statements by unrealized people? And analyze them, and you know, we have statements by, for instance, when Jarasandha comes and says all nasty things about Krishna, but actually,
they say he was glorifying him.
He was glorifying him, or that it was actually goddess of fortune, not goddess of fortune, but goddess of speech, who was glorifying and goddess of learning, Saraswati. And this means that, and it doesn't mean this, but it means that.
I guess
I don't know if this is a criticism by scholars.
Well, it's interesting. I haven't finished. I've only watched a small part of the Radhika Raman's presentation on the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm.
But the emphasis was given in this earlier part that Bhagavatam could really only be understood with commentaries of our acharyas.
Yeah.
It explains that principle.
Yeah, yes.
So if you try to understand Bhagavatam without the commentaries of our acharyas, you won't be able to extract the essence. So it would seem that if the commentaries on those verses by the acharyas present those verses in a way that's helps us to understand the intent of the speaker in terms of his aspiration for pure devotional service, despite that he may not be situated on that platform, then why not quote that verse as long as we have the acharya's commentaries to help us understand it?
Yeah, that's very, very valuable, very good. How then, scholars or other commentators will accept that you've got to, you know, Shastra requires a further elucidation than anyone can elucidate in any way that they like to fit their own concept or their own conception. Why isn't it stand alone? rather than Gona, being Gona Vritti, that it's Mukhya Vritti, that it's just self-evident. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. It's self-evident. So, you know, Krishna's words are pretty black and white in the Gita. I mean, there are some ambiguous places, but in others it's not. And I guess that's how some of those verses can be clarified, is to find unambiguous statements by then perfect authorities like Vishnu, Krishna, and whoever else is speaking, and see if they clarify those statements as well.
Well, isn't it also another understanding that the Bhagavatam has many verses which may lead the reader into an impersonal idea, simply to hide from those who have such inclination the real truth or the real essence of the Bhagavatam's purity? And I mean, this point is raised oftentimes. I hear when Bhanu Swami, he speaks Bhagavatam, he raises this point a lot, that, you know, it's a hidden message which can only be understood and relished by those who actually are aspiring for, you know, for devotional service. But one can draw impersonal conclusions from various verses of the Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that doesn't give a full, complete answer, but it's, I guess it was Vyasadeva's intent.
Yeah. I mean, in this case, what you're saying is it would say that, so there are verses, you know, by conditioned souls, and if someone is,
and if the scholars, yeah,
looking for
an
reason
excuse
to downgrade the value of the Bhagavatam, then here's some statements, but there are, but that's hiding the glory of devotion and devotional service, and ultimately the real message of the Bhagavatam, which comes out in the 10th canto, and especially in those five chapters.
is understood and relished by those who accept Bhagavatam in the spirit that it should be accepted by hearing it through disciplic succession. That was the whole point that Lord Chaitanya made to Vallabha Bhatta, who didn't accept Sridhar Swami's commentaries.
By those who are thoroughly honest, right?
Yeah. Yes, in the first canto.
You have to be thoroughly honest. Interesting statement. Thoroughly honest.
And thoroughly honest means hearing it properly in disciplic succession.
Yeah, you have to accept the process as much as the actual text itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the process is, like you said, the acharyas and commentators, the real acharyas, not just some conditioned soul, but someone who's qualified, a Vishwanath, Chakravarti, and so on. Okay, that's good. That's good. I can move on.
We have Bhagavatamrita?
Yeah. I'm a coming. Text 301. Lord Hari and his elder brother mounted the chariot which a courier had quickly brought. With great effort, Krishna withdrew his gaze from the gopis. Seeing the gopis sobbing, fainting, falling to the ground, overwhelmed and covered with dust. Have you got fisherman's friends over there?
No, you took them. I can get another package.
I did. I didn't bring them back.
I'll get it.
And covered with dust, Yashoda also cried pitifully. Though Nanda Maharaj was also miserable within, with great effort he consoled Yashoda. showing seeming expertise in taking care of the business at hand. Commentary. Here the word Eva, as if, indicates that even though Nanda seemed to be consoling his wife very competently, he couldn't actually get very far. Sri Nanda said, verse 304, "Don't think that I'm going to that city happily, or could ever accept Krishna to be someone else's son, or leave him there for any reason and come home alone, or lose my wits and allow him to stay there very long." Thank you. Like, that's a really, I'll go for some other, go for mint. That's a really far out thing. Can you imagine telling somebody that you raised somebody since a baby and telling him he's not your son? I mean, there's, you know, you can't do anything worse to a parent than telling them he's not your son.
I once did that to my mother.
Huh?
I once did that to my mother. I'm serious. I was in college, came home from college, I was studying. I was reading these impersonal books. And somehow, I had this idea in my mind from reading these impersonal books that my mother wasn't my mother. So I thought I should just tell her that. I said that. I just said, "By the way, you're not my mother." So I guess she was saying something to me that I couldn't handle, so I thought I should just make the point. By the way, my mother was just completely devastated. I mean, she put her hand up against her head, stood against the refrigerator. Anyways. So I know what you're talking about, because I witnessed it.
Yeah, you just couldn't imagine. Commentary. It's hardly for sightseeing that Nanda is eager to take Krishna to Mathura. Though Mathura is the home of intimate friends like Vasudev and maybe a great city, the real reason Nanda is going is that Kamsa ordered him. And this is hardly a cause for delight. Mathura may be the home of the Yadus, but as long as it's ruled by Kamsa, it will be a disagreeable place to visit. Akrura's assertion that Krishna is the son of Vasudeva is a lie. As far as Nanda is concerned, Krishna could never transfer his affection to anyone else. Even if Vasudeva and the Yadus were to try to keep Krishna and Mathura by force, Nanda would never return to Vrindavan without him, and even if Krishna, after killing Kamsa, were to be crowned king and wanted to stay in Mathura to enjoy the kingdom, Nanda would never allow that to happen. 305. I doubt whether we or any of the Brajvasis could live for a moment without your son. So you can take it for granted that as soon as we free Sri Devaki and Vasudev, I will very quickly come back with Krishna. 306. Sri Swarup said, thus assured again and again by Nanda's solemn vows, Mother Yashoda became peaceful, more or less. She then made a great effort to console the gopis. 307. She tried hard to calm them in various ways and induced them to get up off the ground. Then the cowherd men mounted their carts, and Akura started driving the chariot, because Yashoda has a very nice group. She knows all the gopis. She's very favorably inclined to them. They come.
Because they all come and serve, help them with the serving, with they the do, breakfast.
They cook. They do all kinds of services to help her. So she knows them all individually. Commentary, Yashoda sprinkled water on the gopis and somehow brought them to their senses. Akrura was anxious to go. 308. The women of Braj couldn't tolerate even slightly being separated from Krishna. As they watched him depart, they cried, "Alas, alas." The faces, well, should be, "Alas, alas." Their faces dried up, their steps faltered, and they saw pitifully in great anguish with long drawn out cries, their voices choking in their throats. And they ran behind the chariot, their laments filling all directions. 3:10. Some of them held on to the chariot, others forcefully fell beneath its wheels, some fainted, and still others couldn't even go forward. Commentary. Some gopis threw themselves in front of the chariot to try to stop it, or else to kill themselves. 3:11. The cows, bulls, calves, deer, all the animals stood around the chariot, bellowing, their faces drenched with tears. Commentary. Even wolves and jackals approached the chariot to join the chorus of lamenting animals. 3:12. Frantic birds flew here and there above Krishna, making a commotion, and suddenly the leaves of the plants dried up. 3:13. Stones and mighty trees fell from the tall mountains. The rivers shrank and flowed upstream, leaving their creatures high and dry. Commentary. Govardhan and other mountains threw down large stones and trees. In some places the rivers dried up, stranding their flowers and vegetation on the land, and in other places the rivers began to flow upstream. 3:14. Seeing his most beloved devotees in such a state churned Krishna's heart with pain and sorrow. Nothing he could do could stop their wailing, and from his own eyes he had to wipe a flood of tears. 3:15. The elder Vrishnyakrura, fearing that Krishna might jump down from the chariot and go off again somewhere, supported the Lord from behind as if affectionately concerned that the Lord might faint and fall down. Commentary. Akrura had practical intelligence acquired from many years of service to the Vrishni rulers. Now that he was finally on the way to Mathura with Krishna, he did everything in his power to assure that nothing would go wrong. He made a show of holding Krishna to protect him from falling. But the fact was that he wanted to prevent Krishna from again running off. 3:16. Noticing that Krishna was indeed about to faint, Akrura took permission from Balaram, Nanda, and the others, cracked his whip, and vigorously made the chariot's horse set out. 3:17. He quickly drove the chariot away, swerving to avoid the animals and the cowherd women who had fallen here and there. 3:18. As the gopis looked on, crying woefully like kurari birds, Akrura drove off with Krishna like an eagle carrying a piece of flesh. Commentary. Akrura seemed to carry Krishna off as swiftly as an eagle flies off with its prey, and just as cruelly. 3:19. He drove the horses so swiftly that no one could tell where he went. Commentary. The horses were well trained, faithful followers of Kamsa. 3:20. All the cowherd men headed by Nanda mounted their own carts, yoked to large bulls, and quickly followed Akrura. 3:21. Akrura brought Krishna and Lord Brahma's lake, offered him many kinds of prayers, and counseled him with a continuous flow of logical arguments, in this way restoring him to an almost normal state. Commentary. Akrura hoped that being at Brahma Radha, better known as Akrura Tirtha, would remind Krishna of how Krishna had given the cowherds a vision of Vaikuntha, and that memory might further remind Krishna of one of the purposes for which he had descended to the earth to kill Kamsa. Okay, I'll just read the next verse. I have questions. 322. How the people of Vraj then suffered is too painful to hear. Alas, alas, telling of this topic shatters even the lightning bolts. I have said enough. Commentary. Those who hear about the misery of the Vrajbasis underwent after Krishna left them will endure the same misery. Therefore, in the company of those unprepared to suffer, this topic is best left undiscussed. And 323, Sri Parikshit said, Sharup, having said this, his voice full of grief, loudly wept, dear mother, and overwhelmed by the ecstasy of pure love, he fainted. I've thought on for many a year about how the Bhagavatam, as we said, it's hiding the real truth of bhakti while presenting it in unbelievably explicit ways as well. Chanting, hearing Krishna's pastimes, chanting his names, and repeatedly over and over again. And I mean, any book has a build-up. It builds up somewhere. Sometimes maybe builds up at the end. But here, for me, the build-up is, okay, now Krishna, Stu Bhagwan Swayam, we stated that. So finally here is about Krishna. Up to now, it's been all about the incarnations and so much history. And then you get Vrindavan of Krishna's pastimes. And then what's the build-up in Krishna's pastimes? And it comes to Gopi Gita and those, so it comes to those chapters. And then more or less after that, there's some more glorification of Krishna playing the flute by gopis, and you know, Krishna leaves Keshi, and then here then begins a real different thing that when once again, if you see with commentators. Here, all right, Akrura takes him and goes to the edge of Vrindavan, which is Akrura Tirtha, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed, which we should talk about because that's an interesting thing, why of all places Lord Chaitanya stayed there, and then walked from there all the way to Imlital on a daily basis and some other places around there. And when he and there, this whole concept, Krishna's going in to bathe. He goes in as Rajendranada, and he comes out as Vasudev Krishna.
And you're saying because it's, well, it's still in Vrindavan.
Yeah. Well, it's on Vrindavan. It's on the border of Vrindavan and Mathura. And and after that, I mean, people have to be really essential. Then that's the peak. And then it's Mathura, and nothing like this, nothing like Rasalila, nothing like this separation, Krishna leaving, and Bhagavatam, when Krishna leaves, I just right now it's just horrible. You got a 10-2?
Yeah. Oh, you want the book itself? Or do you want it for my phone?
Well, at the moment, maybe you got it better. What are the chapters on Krishna's, or the chapter Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. Because then there's
the prayers of Akura.
No, earlier Krishna leaving Vrindavan.
Akura's arrival in Vrindavan, Akura's vision, the prayers of Akura.
Okay, Akura arrival in Vrindavan, Akura's vision. So end of Akura's arrival in Vrindavan is, yeah. What chapter is that?
38 is Akura's arrival in Vrindavan.
38, yeah.
39 is Akura's vision.
And prayers of Akura are?
40.
What about the earlier prayers on his way? No, that's not a separate tribe. That's on arrival.
That's on arrival.
So, yeah.
That's Krishna and Balaram entry.
So it's like a peak, and then you don't have these wonderful pastimes anymore. Mother Yashoda, Cowherd Boys, that type of loving pastimes are not described. The nature of Krishna's Leela changes. It becomes, he's still killing demons, but so
you're saying, why doesn't it get progressively more intense?
No. It's just for an observation. For me, there, the Bhagavatam peaked. And then after that, it's sort of anti-climax. And in 10th canto, well, not anti, because it's all Krishna, and it's all wonderful. But it's for... If you really understand Bhagavatam, you understand that this is what it's about.
The smiling face.
Raja Bhakti, the smiling face. And this is what it's about. And this is, again, already alternative. Before it was alternative, all right, if you want the heavenly planets, or if you want Vaikuntha, or if you want some other incarnation, but actually... When you talk about Krishna, then you talk about this Krishna. But these are their Mathuras there, and then especially Dwarka as a real alternate place. And then beyond that, it becomes a philosophy. It's really wrapping things up again. 11th and 12th canto is just wrapping. Of course, there's things Markandeya, and those are far out pastimes, but they don't talk about this kind of bhakti anymore. I guess, yeah.
So you're saying that Brihad Bhagavatamrita is sort of like different in that respect?
No. No, because he just continues with the same type of Krishna Leela up there, and the same type of mood. Volume 1 is Dwarka, but it's Krishna and Dwarka, you know, all about coming back to Vrindavan, about being in Vrindavan, trying to be in Vrindavan.
And Vrindavan concludes that those Vrindavan pastimes are the highest, most relishable, and the ones that should be disseminated throughout the whole universe.
And that's what Lord Chaitanya came to give. So like what you were saying before, even without the parampara, particularly parampara means Lord Chaitanya, and he's a commentator, although it's not written, but that's came to emphasize Krishna prema. Even when it says Krishna prema, it means Braja Prema Pradayate. He came to give this Prema. But you gotta You got to be attentive to enough to pick it up and to want it. I don't know.
So you're saying that systematically the way the Bhagavatam has been presented doesn't really give the full picture if you just follow it systematically, especially if you go to 11th and 12th cantos, because the essence is in the 10th canto.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm not saying it's any kind of shortcut, you know, it's not doing something.
No, I understand
I'm just
that.
Saying that that seems to be its flow. The flow is sort of peaks there, and then particularly it peaks with this the separation, that there's a meeting and separation, which is there, because it's repeated over and over again. Chapter 21, the gopis are, you know, song of the flute, it's all about separation, and Yashoda's feeling separation, cowherd boys, you know, for just a minute, and they feel separation. And
but wasn't it also because Shukadeva Goswami, when he was speaking the Bhagavatam, that he wanted to complete it, but he didn't go give... He entered too much into confidential topics, and was specifically related to Krishna and his Vrindavan pastimes with Radharani, because out of fear that he would lose consciousness and not be able to complete the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, but the other reason was, which I was going to comment on, was because of his audience. Because when Parikshit Maharaj asks him, well, you know, how is it possible that Krishna's, you know, dancing with other men's wives and all this? And Shukadeva Goswami sort of comes to, and he sees it as a wake-up call from Parikshit Maharaj that better look around as to who the audience is. So that's a very interesting thing.
Therefore, we have Brihad Bhagavatamrita.
Yes.
Pariksit's coming out. Pariksit Maharaj is now coming out with telling his mother Uttara, this is the essence of what I got.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But the interesting thing is that here's the Shastra, and yeah, I mean, it's just as you say it. And then here's a material circumstance that these sages happen to be there, Brahmavadis and yogis and gyanis and who knows what, Karmavadis. And because of them, we, for umpteen generations, can't hear the full message. Now we can hear, because Lord Chaitanya told Sanatana Goswami to write it. What about the poor people for 4,500 years along the way? I guess that's why we're still here.
Yeah, actually, that's in a nutshell. Actually, that really just reinforces the whole topic we were discussing before.
Yeah, and you say, and therefore, and Parikshit Maharaj, this is what I understood.
This is what, yeah, exactly. This is what I understood.
It wasn't said.
It wasn't said, but this is what...
At least we didn't get it recorded, but this is what I understood.
And it wasn't until Sanatana Goswami...
So what do you understand when you hear Bhagavatam? That then becomes the real... Yeah. When this is what he gets out of all that, of course, he had... revelation. It comes Jaimini Rishi's revelation.
Yeah, he was there.
Which was interesting.
And Jaimini Rishi was there listening to Shukadeva Goswami.
And I just read someone mentioning Jaimini's name as being in complete illusion. and not understanding the real purpose of the human form of life.
Really?
Yeah. Whether that's the same Jaimini or not, but it's there in the Bhagavatam. Yes. Yeah, this is... So, what do we hear when we hear the Bhagavatam? And it's in the message, but shushito shodadanascha.
Vasudeva kataruchi.
You gotta really hear. You gotta really listen. And there may be more to it than what appears to be in the words. The words have more message to say.
And that's exactly it. In the whole, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya's chastisement of Devananda Pandit. Because he was speaking Bhagavatam, and he was renounced, and he was presenting it in a way that clouded the full meaning. And Lord Chaitanya, in his chastisement, he made the point very clear that from beginning, middle, and end, Bhagavatam does nothing except glorify pure devotional service. But, of course, that's pure devotional service, but you're talking about
that's the key, what you said. This is what I understood from the Bhagavatam.
Right.
What did you hear? This is what I heard. No, this is what you heard. So it's not stuff within the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, I was thinking about that actually, because I've been really studying Priya Bhagavatamrita. I was thinking, this is Pariksha saying, this is what I heard. And
if you go back to part one, all those stories about the different incarnations, Pandavas, Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Shiva, and this, they're all there in the Bhagavatam. And he all talks about the gradation of bhakti and the gradation of devotees and the gradation of devotion and all the references as to why they're not qualified goes back to the Bhagavatam stories. They always say, Lord Shiva says, yeah, right, but I challenged my Lord and I fought with him. So that puts into perspective what all of those, that if you're really looking, then keep going.
That's right. All those personalities were all in Bhagavatam.
They were all in Bhagavatam.
That's right.
And all the things that they quote, why I'm not qualified by Bhagavatam.
Look at Prahlad.
Yeah. And so it keeps going, and Bali Maharaj and everything else, and it keeps going up and up, and they just keep saying, keep going. And that's,
well, that's wonderful.
For first nine chapters, they're telling us, just keep going. And then when you get to Dwarka, is that it? Krishna wants to go. He keeps going. He wants to get out of there. And he wants to go to Braj. So if Krishna is not satisfied with Dwarka, which will come after, then get it right while these other chapters come and keep going.
Yeah, that really enhances the meaning of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that analysis.
That was good. That was, yeah.
Yeah. It's ecstatic. It's not just good, it was ecstatic.
Just keep on going. And keep going. And if you think it's Uddhava or Narada, because Narada's just so amazing. He's everywhere. This guy's everywhere.
Dhruva, he's Prahlad.
Everybody. He's with everybody.
Vyas.
And you just keep going, and even if, you know, he just skips over Braj, and he just goes to Dwarka. You know, go through, because we went to Udava, and then that way he got access, he went to Krishna.
Yeah.
Now he says, okay, but Krishna wants to go somewhere, so I missed something then. Then we got to backtrack, and then we backtrack here.
Yeah.
And she says, okay. And then she's the one who brings up the gopis. He said, well, Krishna wants to go there. And then these devotees have this extraordinary love. There must be a different place for them than Vaikuntha. Otherwise, it's not trustful.
Uttara,
yeah. So what is this different place? I don't know if she doesn't know, as if she doesn't know. She was also around, so she heard about those pastimes, because she was there when Krishna was there. So she heard about Krishna's pastime. And so she's bringing it back to here. Okay, well, we missed something. Let's just focus back on here. What about these folks? What about this bhakti and Vrindavan and what Krishna wants to go for? More as essence. And that's what this is all about. Sanatana Goswami Ki Jai. It's such a far out book, isn't it? It's mesmerizing. I'm afraid to pick it up because it'll break my concentration on reading Bhagavatam. For me, this is good every day or every second day.
Yeah. Yes, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I'm afraid to put it down.
Yeah. Now I said, why do anything else? This is what it's about, and who knows if, you know, one just keeps on going and keeps on hearing. Maybe we become Krishna conscious.
My biggest problem is I get tired sometimes. And I would like to be able to just read continuously all day, but I get tired. But I can't lie down.
So? You can't lie down.
Well, not after I eat. I can't lie down for at least 3 hours.
Well, getting tired, Lord Chaitanya's associates all got tired, so that's not an issue.
Such a drag getting tired, though.
Even Krishna and the gopis got tired during the rest of that, so you get tired. But yeah, you should be able to rest.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, I should get ready, although I got really intoxicated by that Jagannath Mahaprasad. I'm still flying right now. I had some far dream, but I couldn't remember it.
I am fortunate. I got a sour stomach. Even though I really avoided the real heavy preps, I think I ate curd, and that curd must have been fried.
No.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah. It did me in.
No question.
It did me in.
Shall we disconnect and Now, but we need to continue. But why did Lord Chaitanya stay at the Puragata of all places? Because it's a real place of, and this whole concept of transition goes in as one Krishna, comes out as another Krishna. Well, symbolic, because they're all the same, but now he's manifest, and the Yashodanandan has become...
Well, he comes out as Vasudeva Krishna, because Swayam Bhagavan doesn't leave Vrindavan.
But Krishna, the Vrindavan Krishna has become Aprakat, where Prabhupada said that he's in his Bhav expansion. I've never seen that anywhere, this Bhava expansion. Where it comes from. Of course, I've seen commentaries subsequent to that, or over there with Prabhupada talks about this Bhava expansion. Krishna's always in Vrindavan in this Bhava expansion. Whether he means Bhava, like the devotee's emotions, or, but he's certainly there in his uppercut form, he's always there. Vrindavan Parishadja Napadami Kudachati.
But the two parts, it's like the point that you raised, is the first part is discussing all the personalities who are in the other cantos of the Bhagavatam and putting their positions and realizations in perspective. And before getting to the personalities, well, no, actually, when you think about it, the personalities described in part two, you're going first to the Svargaloka, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Mahakala.
There's a difference in first part. You're just going Vairi Bhakti, Vairi Bhakti, Vairi Bhakti, Vairi Bhakti, Vairi Bhakti, Vairi Bhakti, Vairi Bhakti mixed with spontaneous service, and then you know Vrindavan. Then it's one type of mood. But it's more or less all about that. Different types of Vairi Bhakti. And from some devotees, as they go along, I guess in the universal scope of things, someone may, yes, for me, Prahlad Maharaj. And I want to go there. For me, you know, Hanuman.
Mahesh Tham.
Yeah. Hanuman. And I want to go there. Or in Dwarka. But the other is the path leading to spontaneous devotion.
The other meaning part two.
Part two. Even though it goes through those others, but already starts that he's already got rag. He's already got this attachment by the blessing of his guru and previous birth. We didn't really complete that discussion of previous birth where he came from.
How he entered.
We could leave that for tomorrow as well.
But he was the son of a, I was just reading today, he was son of a cowherd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Born in Govardhan.
Born in Govardhan, well, yeah.
Anyone would take, you're born in Govardhan, there's something really special.
But point that you were just making before that, which is interesting, is that when Gopa Kumar was in, I guess it was Mahakalapura, when the Vaikunthavasis were speaking to him before and telling him to go back down to Braj, Mathura, they were explaining to him that you have to stop chanting your mantra as a duty.
This is as far as you get.
Yes, yeah.
Liberation.
Right. Now you have to... At that point, spontaneous, in Nam Sankirtan.
Well, he has spontaneous, but it's mixed. Because he just got this natural attachment to this Gopal, whoever he is, from somewhere, either from his guru, he got it, or from previously. And
that was made very clear.
But that's as far as you go. Yeah. But it was dominated in any case by Vaidhi. That I have to chant this mantra. And, oh yeah, right. I promised my guru to chant this mantra. And yeah, if I want to go there, I got to chant this mantra. And
right. Well, and that was the Vaikuntha Vasis.
Yeah.
They said you got to...
You have to learn how to chant with love.
With love, yeah. With devotion.
With love. And for that you have to hear Bhagavatam. And then when you hear the Bhagavatam, then you have to get... Then you got the blessings. Then you got final meeting with his guru. That was the final meeting. And that final meeting that was very, very deep. And then when he chanted, then ecstasy awoke, love awoke. Because at that point he'd developed Urindi Adhikar. He'd become sufficiently purified, sufficiently educated, made the sufficient effort, certainly made lots of effort, put in the time, said the other day.
Yeah, a few days of Brahmat.
He put in the time. And I guess we're a little impatient.
Worried, I guess, for me.
And then, yeah, it's just it's Brihad, it's Bhagavatamrita, the essence of the Bhagavatam. And then even that, one should analyze and study. And I guess you keep raving about Laghu Bhagavatamrita and the commentaries.
Yeah.
And that probably would help us as well if we're studying that side by side. And literally, this is what, Katyanta Shamam Nitya Tushyanti Chara Manti Chara. That's what devotees are actually supposed to be doing. Giving Bhagavatam class is sort of a formality. This is... When you give Bhagavatam class, who's sitting in the class gets the essence like Parikshit Maharaj. Well, you have the experience that you're thinking of something, but you know, okay, but now this is what I'm saying. And what I'm saying is different than what I'm thinking, but I want to convey this, that's the hidden message behind it. But who knows that? Parikshit Maharaj certainly knew.
Adhikar was there.
That was a far thing, that this is what Parikshit heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got volume 2?
I do.
Here?
Volume 2 is right here.
I'll just put the folder here. It says, and then just in the beginning.
Uttara's question?
No, that's in volume one. By the grace of my spiritual master, starts.
Well, here's volume one right here.
That's volume one. Shri Jaimini said, I'm just looking at how, just reminding how the empowerment goes, that how Sanatan Goswami was, heard this as a revelation from, by Jaimini Rishi, right?
Is that there?
Yeah. It's in one of the explanations.
It must be in volume one.
Maybe in volume one, maybe in volume two. It's right in the very beginning. That's the other volume one. And it's also somewhere in the introduction as well, or preface, or whatever. It says how Sanatan Goswami understood this by the grace of Jaimini.
I don't remember where it is.
Okay.
Wait, it's right this. Wait, what's this right here? Author Sanatan Goswami, unalloyed devotee with no material motives, has fully realized the science of Prema Bhakti. He has expertly molded the presentation of elegant poetry. How has Srila Sanatan been able to collect the gist of many devotional scriptures under one title? For years, he diligently engaged his mind studying many scriptures and engaged his heart in devotional meditation. Conducted this outward and inward research under the compassionate guidance and protection of the Lord of Consciousness, Chaitanya Dev. It doesn't say anything here about Jaimini.
Okay, I'm going to go.
All right.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.